Good morning. All right, I think God's adding to the drumming this morning from the sounds of things. I'm so thankful you're here. I'm glad that some of you could get in here once that rain started, because it was a downpour. And thank you for being here, your commitment to be here. So is everyone glad to be here? Well, now, I can send a couple of these guys around to shake y'all a little bit and make sure you're awake. I know this rainy weather makes us want to sleep. Hey, I'm thankful that our youth are back and had a great trip. If you participated in that trip, raise your hand right quick and just so you can see. Talk to one of these people about what's going on, what can happen on a mission trip, what it's like to be on a mission trip, to experience that and be part of it. And we're thankful that you took time out of your lives to add to the kingdom, and we're thankful for that. We're going to continue. If you want to, go ahead and mark your Bible, the 23rd Psalm. And everybody probably can quote that one, and Johnny and I laugh because no matter what version I read it in my head, I say it in the King James. I think that's the way everybody has learned that at one time, is in the King James. Johnny even laughs. He says, when I use the 23rd Psalm at a funeral, he said, no matter what I do, I always read or say it in the King James Version. But that's where we're going to be the majority of the time today. And we're continuing along this road about the doctrine of God the Father and where we're going to be for the next several weeks. And today we're going to talk about God's sufficiency. And how, one, we're going to talk about his sufficiency, what does he depend on, and then apply it to our lives and how we are dependent on God and how we can apply that to our lives and understand that. The main thing about God and his sufficiency is that God's sufficiency means that he is independent and he is complete within himself. He depends on nothing else. You can't add to it. You can't subtract from it. I can't change it. None of us can change it. It defies comprehension, God's sufficiency, because nothing else is like it. It frustrates man because we can't put limits on God. And you're going to see here in just a second, as I walked away from my phone, and I pulled up a stat that I wanted to share with y'all. I'll see y'all next week. Y'all have a good week. Some of y'all are saying, amen, let's get out of here. So I'm going to show you some things, some statistics here in a minute that I thought were pretty impressive about God's sufficiency. But we can't put a limit on God. We can't do that. But here's what I've learned. The more that I do learn about God, the more he reveals how little I know. The more I learn about him, the more I realize how little I truly know about God. And when I realize how little I know about him, then I realize how much more there is to learn about him and how much closer I can become to him through the knowledge of trying to understand him and just get maybe just a glimpse of that, because there's no way as humans we can totally understand that. And God is responsible for his creation. He is the creator of all things, and he is responsible for for his own creation. And I'm going to go back to the 15th and 16th verse of Colossians, the first chapter there that JT, so thankfully he read that for me. The 15th and 16th verse says this: he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation, for by him all things were created. Get that? For by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. Let me just touch. I'm going to throw this in there. I'm not going to charge anything extra for this, that last part. That as politics ramps up in this country, and it's starting, heading toward next year especially. But did you notice what it said? It says, visible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. Let me tell you, God is not anything politically party-wise. It says every authority was created by him. Can we understand that? That us arguing and fighting about it doesn't matter, because ultimately God creates it. And God puts it in place. And at the bottom line of that, it's for His benefit. We may not like it and we may not understand it, but it's for His benefit. He creates it. So remember that as all this ramps up in the coming months, in the next year, that God puts people in places. And that doesn't necessarily mean they are godly people. And I'm not saying anything about any certain politician. I'm just saying let's understand that God's in control. No matter what, God is in control. But if you want to see how glorious God is, did you notice it outside just a few minutes ago? That glorious rain? That is part of God's sufficiency. God created everything. And when God invites us, when we look at creation, and to see a glimpse of His gloriousness, God invites us to just look around. Just look around. Look at the person on either side of you and say, "You're glorious." And some of y'all are laughing when you said that and kind of had to say that funny. But you are God's creation. And that's glorious. God says, look around at it. Psalm in the first verse says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the skies above proclaim His handiwork." Go outside. Find you a dark, dark place, especially at night. And well, it's not going to be dark in the daytime, but at night, find a dark place. And I have found up here when the lights are not on in the parking lot, it's a really great place to see the stars and things like that. But go somewhere really dark and just, if nothing, get you a blanket, lay down on the ground or on the hood of your car or sit in a chair and just look up. Next year, Jennifer and I are celebrating our 35th anniversary, and we're planning to take a special trip for that, and we're trying to decide what we're going to do. And we've kind of looked at maybe Montana might be one location, and I contacted an organization out there, their visitors, travelers, tourism thing, and they sent me a book, and it was full of these beautiful pictures, and every picture I've ever seen of Montana is beautiful. And there's one picture, and there's this hiker standing on the side of a cliff, and it is just an incredible picture because you see the Milky Way. And in the picture, it says this is the Milky Way on display above a hiker, and it told what mountain peak this was. And I thought, that has to be made up. So I sent an email to them. And I said, "Hey, we're looking at maybe coming to Montana." I said, "But I have a question for you." I said, "That picture on the cover of this section or this book you sent me has this hiker, and it says that's the Milky Way." I said, "Is that a real picture?" And they responded and said, "I will tell you this. We did enhance that background a little bit, but that is the actual picture." And I thought to myself, just look around and let God's creation reveal to us just how glorious things are and how glorious His creation is. Each of us are glorious. If you remember in Genesis, when God was creating everything, at the end of the day, He would look back at what He created and He said, "That's good, that's good." And He gets to the end of all the creation and He says, "That's very good. Look, when He created me and you, He said, that's really good. That's real good." And I think we just need to stop sometimes and just realize who God is and that He's our creator. He is not the creation. He is a creator. And here's what I tell you. This is one reason Christians shouldn't argue with atheists or anybody that's a non-believer, because anybody who can look around and deny God as creator is simply a fool. It's foolish to deny God when you look at it. So let me. I just did this search and I came up with this, and I want to give you some numbers here that I think are really, really impressive. Scientists have recently estimated that there are approximately 8.7 million different species on the earth. Now think about God and His creation. They believe that 1 to 2 million of those species are animals. The same study estimates that 86% of all land species and 91% of all sea species have not been discovered or described yet. Now, it says sticking to the species that we know something about. Scientists believe there are over 7 billion humans in the world today. But there are more chickens. There's over 18 billion chickens than humans. We outnumber cattle. There's only 1.4 billion cattle and 1.1 billion sheep. But those numbers pale in comparison to the insect world. For example, scientists estimate there are over 10,000 trillion ants alive at any one time on the earth. And they estimate that the total insect population is at 10 quintillion, which is 10 billion billion. And then that leads one expert to estimate the total animal population on earth to be about 20 quintillion or 20 billion billion. What does that tell me? God is an incredible God. He is sufficient. And let me just go ahead and say something. Let's just talk about one thought in the world today. The Big Bang Theory. 12 billion billion different things were in those two rocks that collided and everything existed. Okay, I'm going to go with that, and I'm going to say I agree with you. Big Bang Theory. If that's what happened, that even impresses me more with God, that he could put all that in two rocks, slap them together, and here we are. That takes more faith than what the Bible tells me. God is an incredible God. You've heard me say in my background in physical therapy that when you just look at creation and God and the body, the human body, and how bones, there are certain bones that are made, they just have a certain groove in them so that they sit just right, or so that the hip sits just right and moves in the socket, the hip joint there, or the shoulder joint is very, how the spinal column stacks just perfectly and protects a spinal cord that is like the electric lines from your brain to the rest of your body, and how it perfectly protects that, and how the multiple bones in your foot attached to toes that are so incremental to the movement when we walk and our balance, and you take that big toe away and you're a cripple almost. But God made all of it perfect to operate the way it's supposed to be. God in his creation is incredible. And sometimes, though, we get sidetracked and all of a sudden the creation becomes the worship. When God is the creator, our worship should be on the creator and not his creation. And God is sufficient and he depends on nothing. He is independent of his creation. He created, meaning this, God does not need anything from his creation in order to exist. He doesn't need me. I've never once got a phone call or heard in my prayer time, I'm in a spot, Marty. What would you do about this? And what do you think? He doesn't ask me. And because I know this, he doesn't need me. He's not dependent on me. He is independent of me. I am part of his creation. But as a child of his, I am a member of his family. I am an heir. And as an heir, I get everything. I inherit everything that Christ inherits. I am a part of the family. There's no deficiencies with God. So he can't be blackmailed. He doesn't have a weakness. He doesn't have skeletons in his closet, anything like that. There are no outside influences on God. God has been influenced by nothing because God is God. And he is not influenced in his decision making by anybody or anything. He is sufficient in himself. He does not need man. He doesn't need me. He doesn't need you. And I know there are people, get on social media, you'll find out people, you'll find people that think they are the center of the universe. And you all know people that their universe stops right here at the tip of their nose. And they believe everything revolves around that. But if I look at God's creation, it revolves around something else. It revolves around him. His creation revolves around him. And when we understand this, this will improve and it will increase our worship of God. Because while God, get this, you can write this down. While God has a voluntary relationship with everything, he has a necessary relationship with nothing. So what does that mean? God has a relationship with me because he wants a relationship with me. He's not dependent on my relationship. I'm dependent on our relationship. Because I'm part of his creation. He is all sufficient. He is God, and I am not. In other words, God creates his creation because he chooses to, not because he has to. Have you ever done anything just because you wanted to? I love to fish. I love to piddle with woodworking, and I do that because I want to, not because I have to. God does not have to have a relationship with me, but he wants a relationship with me. And he's not dependent on us. Sometimes you may think, and we can get in a spiritual funk sometimes, and we just say, well, I'm just not going to church today. I'm going to be what we call a bedside Baptist. I'm just going to stay at home and relax. Or I'm angry at the preacher. Or I'm angry at a decision the church has made. Or I'm doing this, so I'm not going. I'm not going to go for the next month. I am not going to joyfully give to my church. And at the end of the day, God's not hurt. You do not affect him by doing that. The person who gets hurt in that is the person who decides to do that. I need God. We need God. We are dependent upon him. He is not dependent on us. Matter of fact, Isaiah the 6th chapter, the 23rd verse tells us that God has beings in heaven that worship him 24/7, not because they have to, because they want to and they like it. He doesn't need me. He's got beings that worship him, but he wants us. He wants a relationship with us. He has no external needs. There's nothing that he needs. He is sufficient in himself. He is complete within himself. He answers to no one, and he doesn't ask permission of anything or about anything from anyone. You remember last week when I told you what Voltaire said, that God created man, and God has returned the favor. God created man in his image, and that man has returned the favor. That we try to make God who we want God to be. We want God to agree with us. We want God to do what we want to do. Listen, when I tell God to do something, or I tell God he has to do this, or God, you've got to fit in this box. Let me tell you what that does. That no longer makes God God. That makes me God. And woe be unto me if I tell God how to be God. And what decisions to make. He knows everything. He knows, as much as I love myself, I have to go ahead and admit, he knows more than me. And he knows more than you. I know sometimes we think we know it all, and we think that's great, but he knows more than us. He knows the future. I have no clue about the future. No clue. But God does, because he created it. He put it in motion, and he's in control of it. He made his own creation because he wanted to, and he wants a relationship with us. He's not dependent on us, though. But the other side of that equation is we are completely dependent on him. completely dependent. We are not independent of our Creator. God created us because He wanted to. And He said it was very good when He created everything. Said it was very good. Acts, the 17th chapter. You don't have to flip over there. I'll read it to you. Acts, the 17th chapter, the 26th through the 28th verse. Listen to this. And He made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward Him and find Him. Yet He is actually not far from each one of us, for in Him we live and move and have our being, as even some of your own poets have said, for we are indeed His offsprings. We are totally dependent on God, 100%. And we have to depend on Him. You can deny God, but that doesn't change the fact that He's God. I can look at this phone and say, that's not a phone. But it doesn't change the fact that it's a phone. So I can deny Him, but I'm still going to have to deal with Him. Because if I deny God and I rebel against Him, I can avoid His love, but I will eventually face His wrath. Because God is God. And we are totally dependent on Him. We can't get rid of Him. We can't erase Him, no matter what we say, no matter what we do, because He is still God. Do you hear me? He is still God, the one and true God. So where do we find our completeness? We find our completeness and our dependency totally in God. Flip over to the 23rd Psalm if you haven't gone there yet. 23rd Psalm. I'm going to tell you, you could spend probably 2 years just preaching the 23rd Psalm. We're not going to do it all today. God's sufficiency means that I can find my completeness in Him, not in anything else. There are people who find their completeness as an influencer in social media, in awards, in degrees, in accomplishments. But at the end of the day, my completeness is in God. And I want us to take a look at the 23rd Psalm and see how we can apply it to our life. And it says that our completeness is in Him. You remember when David was a kid and he was just a shepherd, young kid, and he was out with the sheep, and God sent to find the new king. And I kind of joked and said it's probably the documented first report of a beauty contest. Because Jesse patrols all of his boys by, and none of them, God says, no, that's not it. And he says, isn't there another one? And his dad says, yeah, but he's just a scrawny little runt kid, and he's out in the fields with the sheep, and get him, bring him in. And they brought him in, and God says, that's him. That's him. Now, God says, this is the king of Israel. But as soon, and can you imagine how big your head would swell up if God says, if God looked at you and says, you're the next king? Can you realize how your head would swell up and you'd think, hey, it's all good now because I'm the king. Sometimes it's good to be the king. And if you don't know what that quote's from, you got some Netflix homework to do. But do you know when God did that? Do you know what the first thing David did was? Went right back out there to the sheep. And went back to work. And I think when David wrote this, it's a Psalm of David. When he wrote this, David realized that what he was to the sheep is exactly what God is to us. And he wrote it down, a Psalm of David. And David, if you remember in Acts, the 13th chapter, Jesus says that when David was selected, that David was a man after God's own heart. That he was really after God's own heart. And the cool thing to me about David, and that that would be said about David is David was no different than me, and he's no different than you. He was a sinful man. But with God, all things are possible. There's no mountain that we can't overcome. There's no valley we can't go through. That God, if we are with God, he'll see us through that. And David is a man that's after God's own heart. And when he realizes this, it applies to us how we can depend on God and find our dependency. Look at verse 1 there. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. What David is saying here is let God be God. Just let God be God. And when I let God be God, I'm not going to lack for anything. How do I apply that? If I let God be God, I know I'm going to eat. I know I'm going to have a place to sleep. If I let God be God, he'll manage my finances. He'll direct me and all that. He'll help me. I'm not going to lack for anything when I allow God to be God. Don't try to make God into anything else. He's God. I've heard the saying, let God be God, because he's been doing it a whole lot longer than we have. Let him be God. And when we let God be God, he will let us be who we ought to be, who he has designed us to be. Look at verse 2 and in the first part of verse 3. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. This is a picture. It's not about eating. This is a picture of rest. And we all need rest. I kind of call that a mental health day or a mental health time. Last week out in the lobby, y'all know because I make jokes about them, that I hang out with Luke and Bob at the golf course every now and then. And as much as they play, they're not any better, and I beat them every time. But y'all just trust me on that one. And don't look at the scorecards. But Greg looked at me last week. He says, why haven't you played with them lately? I said, I just hadn't had time. He said, why? And I said, well, I've been having to work. He said, they're here. And I said, both. And he says, you need to find a time to just go do that. God is saying, we need to find rest. We need to let our minds slow down, let our bodies recover. And he says there, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. We need the rest we need. He completes us and provides for our spiritual needs. Sometimes you just need to step away and just acknowledge that God is God. Let him take control of things, and he is going to give us, even when we are frustrated, even when we're going through painful things, God will spiritually rejuvenate us. Sometimes we just need to stop and, one, just realize God is God and be still and know. Just know it. And he's going to spiritually rejuvenate us. The Bible speaks of two different roads. In Matthew, the 7th chapter, 13th and 14th verse, there's this wide road, and then there's this narrow pathway. And there are two ways, two roads in our lives. Now, the wide road is wide open. And it's craziness. There is partying. It is a show. It's a big production. There are things going 100 in different directions. I had to drive through Atlanta yesterday, and the traffic was horrendous. And I think there were a couple people that were trying to get an early in-person meet with God by the way they were driving. And on this wide road, it's wide open. But when something happens, there's nothing. When something bad happens to us on that wide road, there's nothing. But then there's this other path that is narrow. And it may not be as glorious looking and fantastic. There may not be as much laughing and partying and stuff going on. But in that narrow path is where we find Jesus. And when something on that narrow path is hard or frustrating or painful, and we just break down on that path, Jesus is there to rescue us. And it's a hard path. That wide open path is easy. That small path is hard. I remember several years ago, we had day camp, and we were taking the kids hiking. Now, this is like first graders through sixth graders. And we were going to, Laurel Falls, that's where we were going to hike up to. And this one, we were still at the other building. And all the kids were sitting here. We had our devotion that morning. And I thought, I'm going to give this stark warning about staying on that trail. Now, if any of you have ever done it, it's kind of narrow. Now, it is paved, but it's kind of narrow. And I made the comment, whatever you do, do not run around, stay in a line, stay with your leaders, stay behind your leaders. Don't get in front of the adult in front. If you get over to the too close to the edge of that little narrow path, you'll fall off and it's straight down and a bear will eat you. Does everybody understand? Yeah. Everybody files out to go get on the bus except two teenagers and one kid. And as I'm standing there, two or three of the adults come by and says, good job, Marty. I'm like, thank you. Until I found out what they meant. This kid that's sitting back here crying, who's in about the second or third grade, comes by me, but I don't want to get eaten by a bear. I'm like, what? Good job, Marty. I just frightened this kid. Probably dealing with a counselor at this age, he's 20-something now, because of what I said. But that path is narrow. And if I stay on that path, it may be hard, but God's always there. That's where we find him, is in the narrow path. So he'll supply our spiritual needs. Look at the second part of the third verse. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. He gives me directional. He meets my directional needs. He meets my directional needs. Sheep wander off. Here's nothing. Sheep are dirty. One Easter, we had a sheep in a production when I was youth pastor. And my role was to carry that sheep. And I don't know if y'all remember the vet out in Carnes, but he would always supply our animals. And he brought that sheep over and put him in a dog crate. And he was bigger than the crate. And I got that sheep out. Oh, it was horrendous. It was horrendous. And as I got him out, I'm going to make my way down that center aisle of the church. Evidently, he fed that sheep right before he dropped him off to me. But sheep are dirty. And they get lost. They wander around without a shepherd. And even with a shepherd, they'll wander. And even like us, with God, we wander. We tend to sometimes fall away from him and go do what we want to. David would leave all the sheep and go find that one sheep. And he'd take a rod and a staff. A rod is exactly what you think it is. A staff would kind of look like, imagine a giant walking cane with that big hook in it. And what was that? He'd use that rod to beat whatever creature that tried to attack the sheep. Or if a sheep wandered off and got lost and got in the brush, he had that big old staff that had that hook on it, and he could reach in and he could grab that sheep by the neck and he could pull him back in close to him. And the shepherd protects his sheep and gives direction. Here's what God does. Here's what David did with his sheep, the same that God does with us. He can turn a lost person into a found person. He can take a bad situation and turn it into a good situation. He can take the wrong situation and the wrong decision and turn it into a good situation and a good decision. God will direct our lives if we will let him be God. He would direct every aspect. What we have to do is just listen and follow. Follow the shepherd and do as the shepherd would have us to do. Verse 4, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Sheep in the daytime, if they get into a shade or a shadow, they'll start thinking it's getting dark. And sheep, believe it or not, are scared of the dark. Are any of us in here scared of the dark? Does the dark make us uncomfortable? Yeah, for some people, it does. I'm not a big fan of it, but it's part of God's creation. I think I've shared this story with you, is that we lived behind my grandparents, and when it got dark, we were on the end of a street, and my granddad was on the next street up, but our yards connected, and you'd have to go out this way from our house, through his gate, and back to this side to get to the side door of the house. And it never failed that my grandmother wanted something to give to us or want something from us, or vice versa with my mother. And Marty was always the one that would have to go get it. Marty was a little scared of the dark because it was kind of a spooky place down there. It was dark. It was woods and all that stuff. But I would say, all right, watch me till I get up there. Or my granddad knew. He learned after a while, I'll be watching. And he would watch out his door. But there was a small area over here that I would get into that he couldn't see me. And when I got to that point, I ran like the wind to get back into where he could see me. Because I got into the shadow, because I got into the darkness, and I thought I became afraid. And then I realized he was watching me. The same thing with God. When we get into these dark, shadowy places in our lives, God is watching. But let me, here's the most encouraging thing about that, is I can never get out of his view. I got out of my granddad's view, but we can never escape God's vision. God sees us whenever, wherever. So when the shadows of life come over us, God is standing right there with a rod and a staff, ready to pounce on anything that threatens me, and ready to hook me by the neck to pull me back in when I get out of line. And that is encouraging, that I am dependent on that. David was in that shadow. David was an adulterer, and it went even further than that. He was a murderer. But then he dealt with his sin and came back to God, and God used David in an awesome way. Also in Psalm 127, Psalm the second verse, when we face all these things, I can go to this verse and realize that in the face of all that stuff, God gives me rest and lets me sleep through it. That's what that says. The 127th Psalm, the second verse, that God gives his beloved rest, that no matter what I'm facing, I can sleep through it. I don't have to stay up at night. If I'm staying up at night worrying about something, that's not God's fault, that's my fault. Because I'm his beloved. And as a family member of God, you are his beloved. And you can sleep through the turmoil, and you can face anything when God's there. And God's always there. Look at verse 5. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. God meets my physical needs. He meets my physical needs. Shepherds used to would carry a little pouch on their belt. And in that pouch, they kept fodder. What is fodder? Fodder is like feed, a little grain, a little bit of hay, and all that. They would keep it in this little pouch, and they had a cup as well. Well, what was the point of doing that? And they also had a cloth they would carry on. What is the point of all that? When a shepherd would go and retrieve his lost sheep and he would find them, sheep are terrified. And he would take that cloth and he would lay it out. You see what's going on here? The sheep is making a table for the shepherd's making a table for the sheep with that cloth. And he opens up that pouch and he takes out a little bit of that food and puts it right in the middle of that cloth. And he sets the sheep. He'll go out and get the sheep and carry it like this, or throw it over his neck and carry it back. And he would set that sheep on that table. And he put that food, that little bit of fodder, right in the middle. And he had a cup, and he would go down to the stream, and he'd get water, and it would just slosh over the edge. And it was reassuring the sheep when that water was just kind of dripping over the edge, that there's plenty of water to drink. My cup overflows. There's plenty where this comes from. And he had that food, and he would set that sheep there. And what's the point of that table? There were wild animals all around that table looking at that sheep, but the shepherd is saying, it's okay, enjoy a meal, have a good, cold, fresh drink, because none of these people, none of these creatures can harm you. God is saying, I've put a table out here, and I've got a meal for you. And all your enemies, all the naysayers, all the distractions in your life, if I am at God's table and I am in relationship with Him, they can't touch me. They can't touch you. And I can sit there and I can rest because I know my shepherd. That sheep knew his shepherd was taking care of him. I know that God has prepared this table and I have nothing to worry about. In the face of my enemies, I am okay because God is God and he's in control and he has prepared this very moment just for me. He provides for my physical needs. Look at verse 6. Surely good and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. God is not only God for just a short period of time. He's God for eternity. For eternity, He is God. When I'm down, He can lift me up. When I make a wrong decision, he can straighten that out. When I go a wrong direction, he's like my GPS, and he'll say, make this turn. Turn right and head home. All of that, he gives direction. He helps my decisions. When I'm afraid, he gives me peace. He gives me sleep. He gives me rest. And where I spend eternity is all up to me. And here's all I have to do. God, I am a sinner. Forgive me. Lead me. And these points that I just made to you, they apply to every aspect of our life. If I let God be God, He gives me direction spiritual. He meets my spiritual needs, directional needs, emotional needs, physical needs, and eternal needs. Do you have anything that doesn't fit in those boxes? You don't. I don't. So the only question today is, will you make Him your shepherd? Will you allow Him to be your shepherd? Will you allow Him to meet your spiritual needs? Would you allow Him to give you direction? Would you allow Him to meet your physical needs, your emotional needs? But here's the most important one. Will you allow Him to meet your eternal needs? Your eternal needs start when you come into relationship with Him and He provides salvation from your sin. That's all I'm going to ask you this morning. Do you need that? Do you want that? This altar is open this morning. Johnny will be down here. John's back there. I'll be over here. Won't you come? Let's stand and pray. God, we love you so much, and we thank you for this day. God, thank you for being all sufficient. Thank you for meeting our needs. Thank you for being the all and all one and truly God. God, if there's somebody here today that needs to meet you, I pray that this day be their day. In Jesus' name, amen.